At 6:20, this is KERA News. I'm Stephanie Kuo. Texans are reacting to a federal judge's decision to temporarily block President Donald Trump from ending protections for nearly 800,000 young immigrants. The judge granted a request to prevent the president from ending the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program, or DACA, while various lawsuits play out in court. Carolina Ramirez is one of about 124,000 DACA recipients in Texas. She talked with Houston Public Media.
I think we have been resilient throughout everything. We're over being used as a political pawn by the Trump administration, and we welcome the court ruling as something that would allow folks to renew. I think that a lot of DACA recipients, we have been feeling very frustrated, but out of that frustration, we continue to organize and we continue to fight for a Clean Dream Act and a bipartisan Dream Act, because we know that DACA has been temporary and the Dream Act would allow a permanent solution.
Senator John Cornyn of Texas says the judge who issued the ruling did not make the right call.
We are still analyzing the court decision, but it strikes me as wrong to say that President Obama can create this program, but his successor, President Trump, cannot change it. That is in the nature of an executive action. That's one of the problems of doing things by executive action.
While the president has terminated DACA, he's given lawmakers until early March to craft legislation reviving its protections. And now to another battle, the legal battle over the controversial voter ID law in Texas. A court fight that heated up last year will continue in the courts this year. Courts have ruled the law was crafted with discriminatory intent. One of the questions that remains unanswered, how many Texans lack the documents required to cast a ballot? Justice Department expert witnesses in the case have come up with an algorithm that may provide answers. Eitan Hirsch is a political science professor at Tufts University. He and his colleagues matched the list of registered Texas voters to other lists that included ID information. Hirsch talked with Texas Standard host David Brown.
What did you guys come up with in terms of how many people we're really talking about in Texas who don't have a voter ID?
So we came up with a couple different numbers. About 5% or so of Texas registered voters didn't seem to have an ID. If you look at the people who were regularly voting, such as who voted in the last presidential election, you're down to about 1 or 2 percentage points of people who don't have an ID. And the main thing we found that was at issue in this case was that of those who don't have IDs, minority voters, particularly African Americans, were less likely to possess a photo ID.
That's a little surprising. I think the assumption has been among a lot of folks that it would be Latinos who would not have the ID. But what you're saying is you actually see a greater percentage of African Americans. Is that right?
That's right. Latinos were less likely to have IDs than whites, but African Americans were almost twice as likely to not have an ID than whites.
Why do you think that is?
Could be difference in urban versus rural living. People in cities might not need cars and therefore not driver's licenses as much if they can rely on public transit. There's this question about passport holdership, and you know, it's possible. This is just speculation. Latinos whose families are from Mexico maybe are more likely to have a passport to travel back and forth. There are lots of ideas swimming around, but we don't really know.
At the end of the day, what are you able to do with this information? Now you have what sounds like a rather fixed percentage, roughly 5%. Of all Texans don't have the ID, despite the fact that they are registered to vote. What does that information mean as a practical matter?
That's a hard question to answer, because a lot of people from different sides of the aisle come to that question with different assumptions. Some people think if anyone's denied the right to vote because of a voter ID requirement, that means the law is bad or should be ruled, you know, not allowed, unconstitutional, a violation of the Voting Rights Act. Other people think, you know, we can permit some burdens on voters like voter registration to make elections feel more secure. So what this does is really just give some baseline information that can inform both the court and the participants in those debates.
That was Eitan Hirsch, a political science professor at Tufts University, talking with Texas Standard host David Brown. More than 70% of Americans identify as Christians. And while these Americans share the same faith, they often disagree on gender roles and sexual morality. Today on Think, Chris Boyd talked with R. Marie Griffith, director of the Danforth Center on Religion and Politics, about why Christians are divided on these issues.
some of this comes down, especially for Protestants, to the Bible, how people read the Bible. And for folks for whom the Bible is just a, you know, profoundly important book, the very sort of foundation of their faith, if the Bible says certain things about sex, those must be taken seriously. Now, how they interpret that often gets contested by Christians on the other side, who says, you're over-interpreting these very few sexual passages from the Bible, or there's cultural context there. But, you know, that's really important for them.
R. Marie Griffith is the author of Moral Combat: How Sex Divided American Christians and Fractured American Politics. This episode of Think re-airs tonight at 10, and you can subscribe to the podcast at think.kera.org. Fort Worth's historic Stop 6 neighborhood is considered one of the city's poorest and most underserved. But some changes are happening there to turn around the neighborhood in East Fort Worth. KERA's Christopher Connolly reports on one of those changes.
Saturday morning at Ramey Market usually doesn't have this much fanfare. It's a small, standalone convenience store, pretty nondescript. But today, the Dunbar High School Marching Band is providing the soundtrack for a party to celebrate what might sound like small changes. Changes that many in the community hope will have a big impact. The store has taken tobacco advertisements out of the windows. When you open the door, fresh fruits and vegetables are the first thing you see. They've moved the bottled water to the front cooler, and there's a deli counter as well. This old convenience store has been turned into a small neighborhood grocery. Champanelle Washington lives nearby.
You know, I've been here, it's up 5 years now.
There just aren't places in Stop 6 where Washington can buy fresh, healthy food. So she was stoked when she walked over the other day and bought an onion.
I was never able to get an onion. It's close. You know, you gotta go to the nearest grocery store for that. But being able to walk and get it is, you know what I'm saying, that's a good thing because you get to exercise.
This is all part of a push from the citywide Blue Zones project, which operates on the idea that little nudges will help Fort Worth residents make healthier choices. And Ramey Market was targeted in particular because it's surrounded by schools. There's Dunbar High School, as well as a middle school and two elementary schools, all just blocks away. And that means kids come to the store a lot.
They normally buy chips and stuff, but now since they brought the produce in, I'm pretty sure they're going to start buying pineapples and apples and all that, because that's sweeter than anything that's in the stores.
Dunbar High School senior Desiree Crossley is in the marching band. So is her friend Keviana Lucas, who's 15. She says kids know junk food isn't great, but they buy it because it's what's available.
But now since they're bringing in healthy foods, it just makes a whole lot better difference. Because normally for the kids in the band, like me, we want something that's going to hydrate us and keep us healthy and we can keep moving. We don't want nothing that's just going to leave us and keep us gloomy and stuff. So I don't mind.
This predominantly African-American neighborhood faces a host of challenges. It has high crime rates, low levels of education, and nearly 80% of households here are low to moderate income. Stop 6 is also the focus of a handful of projects aimed at turning things around. The city of Fort Worth is piloting a $2.6 million revitalization project, tearing down old vacant buildings, adding streetlights, and fixing roads. The Fort Worth School District has its own Stop 6 initiative to expand healthcare access for early childhood and engage the whole community in getting kids career and college ready. Sajid Miller is the principal at Dunbar High, and he's optimistic.
Stop 6 has some momentum. We have a community that's willing to engage. We have external stakeholders who are willing to come in and embrace our needs and not judge or not try to dictate from afar, but to be a part of the work with us.
Miller says he's worked to make Dunbar an environment that promotes healthy decisions. And he started working with the Blue Zones Project and Ramey Market so that the message gets reinforced when kids leave campus.
This isn't the panacea of all things health-related in Stop 6, but this is a step in the right direction.
Miller says it'll take a coordinated effort of many small steps like this to make a big difference in Stop 6. Christopher Connolly, KERA News.
It's 6:30. This is KERA News.